There's something that we should clear up right now. Despite what you may have heard recently, Toronto is not a war zone. I promise, I live here, I feel safe, and even if I didn't, facts are easy to find and they all back me up. That hasn't stopped the usual headlines and sound bites, though.
Well, here in the city, another victim of violence, a man gunned down overnight in North York.
A man is dead tonight after gunshots ring out in one of the busiest and trendiest parts of downtown.
A man in his 20s gunned down right here at Yonge Dundas.
A man gunned down overnight in North York.
A shooting incident in the annex.
A man in his 30s has died after being gunned down.
The playground where two young sisters were shot by stray bullets this week remains silent and empty.
Maybe the problem here is that the story we see when the media shows up to a shooting scene isn't the one that's actually being written on the streets of Toronto every day. It's July 13th. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story.
Even after the quote-unquote summer of the gun, even after Tavis, even during carding, I don't think that there's been less trust than there is right now.
Andre Demise is a contributing editor at Maclean's, among other publications. But he's also spent most of his life living and working in the Toronto communities that get painted with that broad brush every time a politician or an op-ed columnist talks about gun violence. So he has a perspective that, say, John Tory, Doug Ford, or me don't. Where do we get that narrative from, the summer of the gun, the summer of shootings? Because this is not the first time that we've had a quote-unquote summer of the gun.
Well, it's funny that almost every single summer you see media reports going out saying this could be another summer of the gun, you know, and we've been falling into that rubric since 2006. So I'm frankly sick of it. I think it's lazy journalism.
Where does that come from? What place does it come from?
It comes from a couple of places. One is obviously systemic racism. It's very easy for people to, you know, to fall into a pattern of believing that, you know, when violence strikes our streets, which happens every single year because it becomes warm and people are outdoors more. And when people are in contact with each other, then there's more, you know, likelihood of violence between parties. It's easy for people who may not necessarily live in the neighborhoods and the communities, but want to comment on those neighborhoods and the communities to say, we have to absolutely do something about this. And what it really boils down to is people in suburban communities generally feel safer when police are locking up black people. That's just a simple reality. Like, we've seen enough evidence from the United States to know that this is true. Unfortunately, we don't collect this kind of information as steadfastly in Canada as happens in the United States, but we're operating under basically the same social system. So I have no reason to believe that systemic racism that we know exists in the United States, that we know white people feel safer when social services are being cut for black people and they feel safer when black people are being put behind bars, I have no reason to disbelieve that the same doesn't hold true for Canada.
So why do you think we're so eager to do something about it in terms of upping police presence?
Well, again, you know, for some people, the sight of a badge and a gun makes them feel safer, for some people. And for other people, one of, you know, my community included, a gun and a badge does not make us feel safer. It makes us feel endangered. You know, when I grew up, and I've grown up in a few places, I mean, I've lived in, you know, Rexdale, I've lived in Mississauga, Brampton, et cetera. But the common thread between these three neighborhoods is that every time that I've lived there and I've encountered police, you know, I have been racially profiled. It's happened to me in just about every city that I've ever lived in Ontario. So, and this is the same for people who belong to the communities where I've lived. Everyone else feels pretty much the same way. But the thing is, the people who feel safe at the sight of a gun and a badge are also the same people who control news media. These are the people who, you know, clock in every day and get paid to voice an opinion. And those opinions usually look like, you know, we should support our police to make us feel safer. And if you have a problem with that, what do you have to hide?
Where do we draw a line between what's responsible reporting on shootings that are actually happening in a community and raising an alarm to the point that, you know, we're seeing federal politicians even weigh in on what needs to be done in Toronto?
Well, it's funny you should bring up federal politicians because, you know, Andrew Scheer, I guess he had a local community meeting out in Brampton, I believe it was. And then he tweeted the results of that meeting and talked about, you know, Toronto's experiencing this spike in gun violence and we have to do something about it. But Regina has a higher violence by every available metric. His home riding in Regina has a higher violence rate. So what are you talking about? Go sweep your own veranda first. Don't come to my neighborhood and tell me, don't come into my home, you know, wipe your feet on my carpet and tell me how dirty the place is. Go clean your own place up first.
What's the relationship like between the police and the community in Toronto right now, in the black community?
This is, you know, just based on my social circles. I'm not going to speak for any community. I only speak for Andre Demise. Just based on my social circles, I would say that even after the quote-unquote summer of the gun, even after Tavis, even during carding, I don't think that there's been less trust than there is right now. You know, when I saw the joint news conference with Mayor Tory and Chief Saunders, my expectations were like underground. Like you'd have to dig a ditch and put the bar down there somewhere.
We've been shocked and horrified by the gun violence that has been taking place in different parts of the city. It has taken young lives, it has traumatized families, and it has shaken neighborhoods. And I want all residents, the chief and I and everybody else involved in the public life of the city, want all neighborhoods and all residents of all neighborhoods to be safe and to feel safe.
Granted, it wasn't outrageous, but at the same time, I was thinking to myself at first, okay, this isn't bad, but why am I accepting not bad as the standard for how the police and for how city council responds to the community?
Why is it worse now than it was when we had Tavis and we had carding? Because it would seem that eliminating those things would have improved it somewhat.
I think because, well, first of all, after the summer of 2005, former police chief Bill Blair was still fairly new to his job. We had just changed over chiefs of police from Julian Fantino, who, in my opinion, was one of the most harmful chiefs of police that Toronto ever had. Bill Blair at least seemed to come by his credentials and, you know, his role in the community honestly, and it seemed like he was acting in good faith. So even like we didn't fully understand the consequences of Tavis until a couple of years down the road, you know, when community officers were basically being superseded by a bunch of cowboys who drove in from outside the neighborhood and then basically just ruined their reputation within the community, you know, and then we didn't really see how bad carding got, you know, I would say until about 2008 or 2009. Like there were still actions being taken by the police services board. There were still consultations happening with the community. Like that was still happening at the same time. So there was almost like two conflicting forces, one where the police were trying to do good and the other where the police brought in this program that was not helping the community at all. Now, after all the dust has settled, we see that there's been a faction within Toronto Police that believes that the strike first, kick ass mentality that they have taken towards the community. Well, Chief Saunders seems to be like the embodiment of that. He seems to validate it. So I would say that after we've been able to look back and see how everything settled, the chief of police now almost seems to be an advocate for these harmful methods that broke down the relationship between police and the community.
Is there any way he can rebuild that?
You're asking a guy who's both black Jamaican, and a member of the LGBT community.
Right.
So I'm seeing this from my own lens. Is there anything that, like, personally, can he rebuild? I don't know about that. I don't know if that's possible. Like, you know, I felt lied to when the police at first asserted that there was no serial killer operating within
that's
the village.
Day, but the evidence today tells us that there is not a serial killer based on the evidence that's involved. One more question.
And then they release a statement saying there is a serial killer and we've caught him. And before that, you know, when Chief Saunders offered his first press appearance after he was sworn in, that was an event put on by Operation Black Vote Canada and a couple of other organizations. And I remember this very, very vividly because he was asked about carding. And Chief Saunders' response was, tomorrow is not a new day.
Abolishing it is not the way in which we are going to say everything's going to be better.
I.e. the status quo is the status quo. We're not going to change anything. So after those two incidents that stick out in my mind, I don't have any faith that he operates in good faith right now.
Explain for the people outside of Toronto what Tavis was.
So the Toronto Anti-Violence Intervention Strategy was a response to the quote-unquote Summer of the Gun, which culminated in the Boxing Day shooting that ended the life of Jane Kriba. And it was an incredibly difficult time because there was an outpouring from the community towards City Hall. Please do something about this. Please help us fix this. What can we do? We are at our wit's end. The Toronto Anti-Violence Intervention Strategy was there to address these neighborhood issues, to go into the neighborhood, find out who the bad actors are, and intervene early. Combine that with carding, and what you ended up with was cowboy policing. There were community officers, you know, people who either live in the neighborhood, people who came from the neighborhood, people who were familiar with different neighborhoods that operated there. And oftentimes you would find black officers working within black communities, you know, brown officers working within brown communities and so forth. It's just people are going to trust other people that they feel belongs to their part of the community. Tavis officers did not come from the community. You know, they might appear at, you know, Jane and Driftwood 1 minute, appear at, you know, Dixon and Kipling the next. And their approach was a complete opposite of community. They didn't care who you were. They didn't care who you know. They didn't care who your mom was or where you go to school or who your pastor is. If they had a reason to stop you and question you, they were just going to go ahead and do that. And if you didn't like it, you were probably going to find yourself face down on the pavement. What does that do to the relationships between people and their local community local community officers? I know this because I've spoken to those local community officers and they have complained that Tavis officers were destroying the relationship in the community. And then on top of that, they were using carding, which I think it's important to understand where this was coming from. And I've spoken to, you know, current and retired officers who've explained this to me. The purpose behind carding was to use geographic data to be able to either prevent or solve crime. So, you know, if you, as a community officer, are driving by a particular strip mall where there's been, you know, robberies, violence, et cetera, and you see people hanging out there, you might stop, get out of your car, talk to some people, get to know who they are, and provide them with a receipt of the interaction. That was the whole purpose. So that if another crime happens to go down there, you know who's been around the area, you at least know who to go talk to.
Right.
And if people trust you enough to reciprocate that conversation, you might be able to solve a crime. That is my understanding. What happened instead was, and this was especially on the part of Tavis officers, they were using that data either to just go and, you know, accost people, or they were trying to pull together more data by talking to random people for no particular reason other than to get them into the database.
Just taking names.
Right. And then that data was used against them in ways that we still don't even really know about because the police have not been transparent with that data.
When we talk about whether or not the level of violence is up in Toronto, whether or not it's more dangerous, sure, the statistics don't bear that out, but it's the perception of that makes politicians like Scheer and Doug Ford talk about it. And what happens next once that perception gets in the heads of these politicians?
You know what? Now that you asked me that question, I wonder why that perception exists, because, you know, if we think about the most high profile incidents of gun violence, it actually tends to be disgruntled or disaffected white boys that are firing off the shots. So I'm stumped there. I don't really know. You ever been to like an all black function and felt uncomfortable?
Of course.
That's my day-to-day life. You know, that's a question I might ask. Why is it that, and if we're going to be honest with each other, like the Toronto news media scene looks very white. Why is it that reporters don't have these kinds of relationships with the community? Like, why aren't you at the barbecues? Why aren't you at the church services? Why aren't you at the community events? I mean, we advertise them. I go to them. I see the same people there.
Yeah.
I don't see news media, but I do see cameras and reporters show up when tragedy happens. And that's mm-hmm. because you want to extract a story and slap a byline on it and get clicks and eyeballs on your news story. But all of the other stuff that happens inside the community, I don't see people around for that. You know, yeah. I'm around for it because I belong to the community. But, you know, again, you all live in the city too. Where are you?
Are those community police officers that we talked about, are they at those events?
Yeah, actually. And that's one, you know, people look at me like I'm this anti-police guy. Like I'm just here to like disparage the good name of the Toronto police or whoever. And that's like some of my best friends are police officers. It's me trying to hold accountable public servants. But I know people who are police officers and who work within Toronto Police Service. Yes, they show up to the community functions too because that's their job. And a lot of times they are interested and they care about the community because it's also their community and they show up. But the cameras show up and the reporters show up with microphones and notepads when something terrible happens.
All right, so on Tavis, one of the things that's been brought up by our new premier, Doug Ford, is the potential of bringing some sort of service like that back, some sort of frontline anti-violence service. How does that work? What does that look like? And what does that do to the relationship that exists now?
From what I understand, Doug Ford talked about bringing Tavis back at a community event nearby Dixon and Kipling. And then he ended up walking it back after people literally booed him while he was on stage talking about it. But, you know, when he tweeted about gun violence in Toronto, he offered his, if I remember correctly, he offered his thoughts and prayers to the community and said, that's not enough. We need action. Again, I'm paraphrasing here. And the people that he suggested that he was going to take action with or have consultations with to take action were police. I didn't hear him mention any community organization's name. I didn't hear him talk about any neighborhoods. He talked about meeting with police. He sees this as a policing problem. As a premier, you should know better. Just want to get away from Tavis for a second. I don't believe that Doug Ford is operating in good faith when it comes to this issue, because if he was, why the hell is the anti racism directorate now in the same portfolio as jails. If you cared about anti-racism, why would two opposing dockets be under the same portfolio and managed by a white guy? Because you've only put mostly white guys in your cabinet, but that's a whole other kettle of fish. When Doug Ford said,
"There's no other politician in this country, no other politician outside of Rob Ford that has supported the black community more than I have."
Do you understand how insulting that is? And I'm not talking about, you know, being a journalist and standing up in an outrage podium and saying, "I am so offended by what he said." No, I'm talking about, like, as a black human being who lives in this province and who lived in the same neighborhood where he was a city councilor. So he knows these people. Like, he knows.
Yeah.
He knows the pastors in my neighborhood. He knows the people who show up at the Rexdale Hub. He's met them. He's talked to them. How the hell can you know people who live in the black community, people who are leaders in the black community, and say, "No one's done more for black people in this province than I have"? Are you out of your mind? And that tells me that if you can make that kind of a declarative statement, that you believe that no black person in this province has done more for the community than you, white patron, have, it tells me that you don't care about us. You know, I know that people think that I have a vendetta against Doug Ford or the Ford family and him as a premier. The least that I expect from somebody who represents me at Queen's Park is that they're a good person who operates in good faith. When you say that this is government, quote unquote, for the people, who are your people?
Right.
I don't feel like I'm your people. I don't feel like my people are your people because you say things like this. So, you know, what is he going to do when it comes to Tavis, or what do I think he'll do, or what do I hope he'll do? I honestly hope that he stays the hell away from this issue, just keeps quiet and leaves it to the experts, because he's not qualified to open his mouth on anything to do with violence or anything to do with black communities. I'm sorry. I can't be more polite than that.
What would you tell people in the rest of the country about what's actually going on in Toronto this summer?
Toronto is the fourth largest city in North America. When we had our most violent year on record, that was in 2005. The city has grown by about 230,000 people since then. And our murder rate per 100,000 is still below where it was in 2012. I'd say we're on the right track. So how do I hope people will hear it? I hope that they'll listen to actual information and not people who stand to benefit from demonizing our communities. That's why I hope they'll hear it.
Thanks, Andre.
Thank you.
Andre Demise, contributing editor, columnist, journalist with Maclean's and other publications, one of the best voices to talk to on gun violence in Toronto. That was The Big Story. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. You can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca and on social media on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Big Story Podcast. And you can subscribe to us wherever you get your pods. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back on Monday.